I wonder what you read, what I missed last time.
Oh, we're not going to tell you.
Luckily for you, it was a short meeting, just an hour, because a lot of people were under the weather, and so we chose to cut it short. So.
Oh. Okay.
And we finished 397, and we're starting 398.
I do have something I wanted to ask everybody about, and I'm just looking for what other people's take on and how they're viewing the whole Me Too thing. Anybody?
97.
Perfect.
You know, it's something I've really had to be looking at in my mind a lot this, you know, recently, because it's not just it's the Me Too everything. It's the Me Too and the fact, you know, even the gun violence stuff. It's, you know, some people run over other people, but aren't they both in it?
Aren't they both in it? Yeah. My immediate thing, like I was a very small kid and I was bullied a lot when I was a little kid, and as an adult, like, you know, a few years ago, it was the bullying thing, and my take on that was there's always going to be bullies out there, but these people, I wish they would just, I wish I was taught as a child how to have a sense of self and self-authority so that I would not be bullied, rather than
right.
go around and put the finger at the bullies.
Right.
And that's kind of how I've been seeing the Me Too thing, and when I talk to people about that, they say, yeah, but how do we change behavior if not bringing it out into the open and saying this isn't okay? And so
you mean the bully behavior?
Well, the Me Too stuff, you know, the
yeah.
sexual inappropriate behavior, sexually inappropriate behavior and all that.
Well, yeah, all that has to be brought out, that there are people in position that maintain that position by disempowering the people around them.
But what about from a forever living point of view?
Right. Well, they're both in it, aren't they?
Both in it. I guess I'm looking for ways to talk to people about it, you know, casually, without having to, you know, bring them to a forever living meeting so they can understand why everybody, you know, we're all in it.
Well, the problem is we don't teach forever living for the very young.
No. These people are victims. But then people hear that as, oh, well, you're putting the blame on the victim then. No, not it either.
No, that's the thing for me is most people, I think, the thing about victim really hits them hard and can't really work on them for years because they don't have a way to look at it in terms of the part they play in their own life. So they can never stop and say, feel empowered by realizing, oh, you know, I have been feeling put upon, or I have been always believing that, you know, how people in power have it over me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, I've been watching this wave since, for me anyway, it's been, when did the Arab Spring start? When did they overthrow their governments in Europe and in Egypt and in Libya?
5 years?
Yeah, whenever that was, I've just been watching a wave of across the planet, it seems, just individuals standing up and deciding they're going to, you know, live a more empowered way, or self-awareness, as you might call it. But in America, we didn't seem to have it quite as much as a violent overthrow as we have these movements. Black Lives, Me Too, whatever else. It's some form of this. And even in Hawaii, there was the big resurgence in the Hawaiian, you know, meaning of being Hawaiian, and what they, you know, stopping the telescope and the mountain, and just the thing they did recently with their own language in our courts. It's just interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. So are they living self-empowerment, or and I'm not talking about the Hawaiians in particular, but just all of these movements, or are they saying, I'd be better if you guys didn't do that?
Yeah, I think that's the way they're doing it. But it's still the fact that they're not just sitting by in their lives as a spectator is a change I'm observing. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're doing it as revolution, which I think is power over another person, and they're going to take it back. We're going to take the power this time. I'm not saying it's curative. I'm just saying it's a change. Probably, honestly, from a duality point of view, it's more of the same stuff.
Yeah.
That's how I view it. It's just a different place on the circle around the same thing.
Yep. That's you see how important it is for... Mm-hmm.
I would rather we help people see how to live their finest self and realize that at any point when anything occurs in their life, they have an option as to how they will memory it and how they will move forward from there.
Yep.
And
it doesn't require picking up a gun and going to school.
Right. It doesn't require standing up and saying, that guy did it to me, or anything else. I mean, most women I know have had some form of sexual abuse. I'm sorry, that's the truth of the matter.
It's a fact.
It's just, you know, okay, that occurred. But how I view it is, okay, that's where I was then, that's what occurred, and this is where I am now. To keep living something for some of these women that happened 20, 30 years ago is pretty self-destructive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, if you keep playing in the man's game, you're going to be abused. That's it.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily at all.
Well,
you know, I went through school and I was the only female, really messed with, let's put it that way. But I stood strong through all of it, and I came out a stronger person. Now, I could have whined and whimpered and gone to boards and gone to all sorts of people and raised all sorts of ruckus.
As a physician, that's not the case with me. As a nurse, that was the case. They do that to keep people in their place.
Yeah, but it's how you feel about it. Now, if you're going to take it on as a victim, then that's the problem.
Well, no, I can leave and go another place and work somewhere
else.
That's not my point. That's not my point.
Yes, but back then, that was the point. I would be fired if women had to change back then. You weren't back then.
Yes, I was back then. I was very much so back then.
1970, you were licensed and working.
I wasn't licensed and working in 1970, but I was licensed and working in 78.
Yeah, well, I was really cute, licensed and working in 1970. And I'm telling you...
The years doesn't make so many difference, I think.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Well,
I think you're carrying that as a burden on your soul,
on
yourself.
So I asked other nurses, how do you get away from this? They said you leave.
But that's the point I think that Misty's making, is that you don't...
That's correct. I think it's time where this is all being brought out, because one person, I felt, that I didn't have the power by myself, and when I talked with other people, I didn't feel the power was there either. And when I saw that those same men could murder patients and never have anything happen to them, I felt pretty disempowered. It's like,
but why did you feel disempowered by that? I think, isn't that your point, Misty? Is that
yes, it's your choice how you
want.
I wanted to have a, I wanted to have income. I wanted to have my job.
Mm-hmm. Which you did.
So you had a, you
so
had
I
choices.
Had my job.
You had choices.
That's correct.
But you're angry and about the choices.
I'm angry about the choices.
It appears to be so.
Yeah, it's not. Well, I'm not. No, I'm a little bit distraught that it was my fault even then. Okay, I guarantee you.
No,
that's not what we're talking about. It's not your fault. There is no fault.
I caused it on myself because I wanted to be able to feed my family and go to school.
I think the question would be if I was to.
Up for grabs and, here is how you felt about it.
That's my point.
Of course.
Yeah. So,
and I know how I felt about it back then, and I can't change that then. I can rewrite it in my mind now that was a very beneficial thing.
And in rewriting that back down, you rewrite your own past also.
Yeah. Yes. And the question is, today, are we, you know, like doing this Me Too or whatever movement is at foot? Because, I mean, I guess I'm troubled because the emphasis is so much on, I won't be okay unless somebody else changes.
I agree with you. And I also think that a lot of people jump on the bandwagon that really are just doing it to be glorified in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, my concern is I think that we may lose some people in position that may actually need to be in those positions that may actually be very good people, but some of their tactics in the workplace need to be reported. You know, they need to be encouraged to see what they do to other people. But I realize that it does take two to play the game. I think there are some very susceptible victims out there that, yeah, they don't need anybody else stepping in to help them, except they need other ways of being able to see it, and they're not being shown that.
Well, then you have a choice to make in your life as to whether you will share with others what you know or just sit back and talk about it. That's the option.
Well, that's all
you
we're
have.
Doing.
No, we're sitting back and talking about it, but we're not doing something.
That's right.
But you can do something within your own life. How you feel about it will tell you everything about yourself.
Well, it's an interesting subject, and it's I've been trying to talk to a friend of mine about it who is learning stuff about forever living. She has an 8-year-old daughter, and she is right on that Mean Too bandwagon. And then and then I present the other picture, and she seems to hear it. But then she's so terrified for her daughter. She says, how can my daughter is 8 years old.
Yeah,
empower her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lead her to these understandings. Have her believe in herself. Give her a sense of self. And
that's what I'm trying to do with my granddaughter. Just empower her to just be. Yeah. And my grandson, too.
Oh, yeah. I wish somebody had done that with me as a kid. Because I saw myself as, small and victimized by all these mean kids, which perpetuated it.
Uh-huh. Well, and I swear that's what we give off that. We give off that. It's almost like, then the bully smells the attraction.
Yep.
It's very true.
Well, the question to me that I've always liked about Forever Living is, I think it was in Canada, in fact. I was listening to a presentation where I think it was a nurse was saying she couldn't tell the truth because that was the job and that was the rules. And somebody, you, Misty or Roger, I don't know who it was, y'all hit her with, what does it say about how you're living your life that you have, brought yourself to this kind of a circumstance?
Interesting. I didn't get along because I always told the truth.
But in either case, the question still stands.
Yeah.
I mean, and
yeah.
And part of this is people think that they only are living on the surface of, you know, I did this and I did that, and that's the only thing going on. That is so misunderstanding of what's really going on. I mean, choices are happening, I don't know how you describe it. You're making choices like with how you take the pieces of the universe and put them together and say, oh, they move this way, they play this way, they work this way. We're all doing that. And how we do that's a part of, I think, we're creating how the universe works for us.
Yeah.
And choice is the decision of what choice we do in each moment is always the choice that serves us in that special, in that moment.
Well, we think
maybe a moment later I would do another choice, but
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting, and the whole idea of unless I, you know, do what this fellow wants, I'm going to lose my job or not get my promotion or whatever. Well, that is a choice that's offered to you.
Or I have to fight against this in my life. I can't let this happen any way, shape, or form. It's, I mean, people can live their ways out of these things without having fought against it.
Well, thanks. Anyway, that's great. That's nice to hear. Nice to hear a perspective that isn't the common one.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything they want to speak about, or dreams they want to go through, or anything like that? Okay, then. I guess we're getting on to the reading some more in Chronicle I. And we are on 398. Begin Again Living. And I guess you're up, Andrew.
Yep. Begin Again Living, 398. Before going too far in this gathering, since we are well represented by healers in the group, what? And a few individuals in need, let's get healing out in the open. Okay. All right, let's get healing out in the open. Kind of works with what we're talking about here.
Karen?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. 399, the word healing comes from an older word that means to make whole, which indicates there is no real healing without your becoming aware of the wholeness of yourself. Adjusting and repairing body and mind is not healing. At best, this constitutes temporary relief of undesirable symptoms.
Now, isn't it amazing how well this addresses what we were just speaking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Passage 400. Actually, healing is not becoming whole in body, mind, and spirit, nor is it getting in harmony with the universe. Healing is more a matter of becoming aware of your vital, inspiring role in the world around you. Now, all of this really, really applies to what we were just talking about.
Karen and I were talking about this healing thing this morning. And one of the things I remember, and I may have misconstrued it in my memory here, but I thought Roger, at one point or other, mentioned that well-being was the natural state of the body.
No, entropy is the natural state of the body.
What's that? I'm sorry?
Entropy is the natural state of the body. It's going to seek its lowest level.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now I remember. And left to its own devices, it just fades away.
That's right. It is we that keep our bodies alive.
Ah. Now it's coming back. Okay, yep, thank you.
So does that mean left to our own devices, our life will seek its lowest level of maintenance?
Yes.
Which so we keep it alive at a certain level.
That's right.
Of desirable.
whatever it is for that, for each individual.
Each individual will put in the effort.
Or not.
Or
not.
They think they need to.
Yeah, or not.
Uh-huh.
And so maybe some of what's happening with the Me Too thing is people are not putting in a full level of maintaining the life they desire, the self they desire.
Right. They stay in the position of being victimized.
Yeah, I don't even think they're even conscious of self or life they desire.
Oh, I think that they may
be
more aware than you think. They just don't know what to do with it. They're in struggle about it.
Well, that may be true because, again, I knew what I wanted and I knew I needed certain things to get there. And, yeah, I thought as much outside the box as I possibly could, but it didn't come to this point.
But it's brought you to where you are now.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I'm just saying back then. There was a reason that I needed to go through what I needed to go through then to be where I am here now, and it's okay that I did that. I don't have a problem with that. I have an issue with, yes, how I feel when I think about that I felt very stuck.
I don't think that there was a reason that you went through what you went through, but in having gone through what you went through, it brings you to where you are today.
Yeah.
And you have to realize there's a big difference between those two statements.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, reason puts it totally outside of you. You are at the mercy of the universe.
Yeah.
Well, you see that?
Oh, I totally see it, yeah.
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 Okay.
Everything that we've been reading for the last few weeks speaks to the randomness of the universe, random meaning without intention or purpose.
Yes.
That's so that events occurring to us can never be meant to happen. They just happen.
That's right.
And then we respond to them.
And that's why I say, in having gone through that, and that's what we're saying. And the choices you made as you went through it create the emergence that comes out each and every moment along the way.
And okay. So healing is more a matter of becoming aware of your vital, inspiring role in the world around you. In the absence of even being aware that we're left with entropy.
Yeah, healing is more a matter of how you will be alive. Okay. Patrick, you want to read the next?
401. Healing is knowing that who you are and what you do matters profoundly. Seeking oneness with God or life or with the universe will defeat you and destroy you.
Uh-huh.
So healing is knowing who you are and what you do matters profoundly. Wow. Yep.
That's the key sentence here. To me.
Okay.
402. You are in an intimate relationship with the world around you. What do you want that world to be to you? And what do you want to be to the world? Whatever life is about, it is not whole without you.
And so, like Karen, I would say this is the kind of thing that I would say to them. Do you understand?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of funny too. I think you might even find a way to say it you're comfortable with, but they might still hear it as very, I don't know if there's a gentle way to make people hear it. You can say it gentle, but if you're introducing a new idea at first, it might take them some getting used to, but that's okay. If they're in your life, they're ready for whatever you have to offer.
That's right. And if they keep coming back, then you know that they want more of the same. They want more of the information. If they walk
and
away, then they don't.
You know, and sometimes I think people hear it and walk away, and they digest it, and then later on they might hear something similar or whatever, and they're more amenable to it. But whatever role we play, we can't really know what's going on.
Through the years, we've had people come back 5, 10, 15 years later and said, oh my gosh, you know, what you said then, I finally really understand what you were saying. So yeah, for some people, it takes them a very long time to digest it.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the beginning of 402 is a very declarative statement. You are in an intimate relationship with the world around you.
How could you not be?
You can be, you might want to be, or anything. You are in an intimate relationship with the world around you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you want it to be?
Okay. Simone?
Okay. 403. Becoming one with the universe, or being in harmony with the world around you, keeps you from being fully present in yourself. Do not live the present. Be fully present in your inspiring self and life at every moment, just exactly as you are.
Doesn't that speak to the faith, at least in part, that becoming one with the universe or being in harmony sets us almost immediately into potential or active judgment, always checking to see if that's true. Am I doing it? Am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong?
I think you don't do it like this. You declare it to be so, and then
yep.
You set it aside. I mean, not in leaving it alone, but carried with you all the time as a declaration.
Yeah, that you're inspiring self and life in every moment. You're carrying it with you all the time and living it.
Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, when Karen was talking about the Me Too thing, a lot of people are trying to be in harmony with others that have similar experience, and in that they lose themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
There's hordes of people who do that.
Oh, yeah. They jump on the bandwagon, even if they don't know how to play the instrument.
They feel like they belong then.
Yes. And so many people have a terrible yearning to belong instead of a terrible yearning to be who they truly are.
Mm-hmm.
A terrible what?
Yearning. Desire.
Yearning. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay, Andrew.
Okay, sorry, I got to get back to my place.
404.
Okay, we're at 404. Where did you lose or forsake yourself? When? How? And most of all, why? Becoming one with God or life or the universe takes you further away from being one with yourself and fully present in yourself. Being awakened in love or consciousness without first being awakened in self will deceive you.
Why is it important to where did you lose yourself? When? How? Why? Why is that important?
Because most people feel lost in life. I mean, think about it.
Everyone in Me Too feels like a victim. They lost
Absolutely.
Themselves.
Absolutely. They lost themselves. Anybody that is in judgment has lost themselves. Anybody that's a victim has lost themselves.
And just so I'm being clear, that's a very broad statement. When I say that, I mean anyone who cannot look at an event in their life and say, oh, I see I was doing this, I felt that, I said these things, I did these things, who can see their self active in the events, has not lost himself.
Yep.
You didn't hear Karen there, but she's a good one.
I mean, you know, some of these are catchphrases if we're not careful, and then there's a lot of ways you can, you know, be aware of yourself aside from being even hey, you know, it's like, it's funny to me, there's like, okay, there's latter day forever living, which is a lot of, you know, more focused on being an eternal being, and then there's good old forever living, which was a lot about like common just everyday enlightenment, just seeing yourself in all these events and things, life telling you about yourself,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Okay.
I just wonder, like, so I drew that one. Why did I draw that one? I got to think about that one in my life. Since it's not an accident.
Okay, Karen?
You just put it really clearly for me, Andrew. Thank you.
Sure.
405. Do not negate yourself. Do not struggle to purify or overcome yourself or ego. Do not attempt to fix or change yourself. Know yourself and be fully present in yourself. For what you want most of all is to continue yourself.
Okay. 406. Regrettably, waiting to continue rather than recur or beginning again and again will defeat you. However, following the example of life in which every ensuing moment replaces the preceding moment, you can understand beginning again.
Let's just not run to the next one real quick. I just want to see that again.
Would you like me to read it again?
Yeah, sure, why not? I'm reading it again. Go for it.
Regrettably, waiting to continue rather than recur or beginning again and again will defeat you. However, following the example of life in which every ensuing moment replaces the preceding moment, you can understand beginning again.
Okay, now I got what you're saying.
Yep, me too. Thanks for that.
Okay. Patrick?
407. Your body lives by memories and does not continue while you live by memory and do not continue.
Oh, okay.
Missed some words there, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
The big ones at the bottom.
Oh, begin again, please. Go for it.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so that is the end of Chronicle I. Does anybody want to talk about anything in that chronicle that they want to bring up again or anything along those lines?
Well, it's I can tell you it's been raw material big time for pulling together stuff for our weekly meetings. It's been very, very useful. And it's like that last little bit. I had an incident today. I was in the health food store looking for a supplement that I had run out of or about to run out of, and there was a new staff member there who I took umbrage with almost instantly, and I got all snarky with her and demanding that she be other than she what she was. And she was clearly upset by me and went to check further on what I was inquiring about. And then I noticed what I had created, and I had given myself copious loads of discomfort and discontent. And I said, what the hell did you do that for? And I became aware of some tension I'd been carrying on another matter completely unrelated. And I didn't want to, I just simply didn't want to live that anymore. So the gal came out of her office where she had checked on something, and I immediately apologized to her and said, sorry about snapping at you, let's talk some more. And that was classic, giving myself the opportunity to begin again. And everything changed. Everything changed.
Yeah.
Everything changed. And it was as I desired. And it's just amazing how that works. It's just so wonderful.
Anyone else have anything they want to say about I?
I don't, actually. It's... Nope.
Well, I think it's one of my favorite chronicles.
Oh, really? What for? What happened there?
I don't know. It just put a lot of things into perspective for me and put a lot of things together. I found it quite stimulating and exciting. When I was typing it, I was just really excited.
Well, there was so much in it. You know, I wonder, and I go back again, what was the big title? Some Ways the Universe Works for You. So all of these things were ways the universe works, huh?
So it just said.
Is it how the universe works for you?
What it was called.
Oh, okay.
So we had, right, we had some Begin Again Please here at the end, Begin Again Living. Okay, random. Yeah, I see. So,
it was like,
and this is what Roger had said once, you know, it's like Forever Living isn't telling you what you should do, it's showing you how life is working, and then you can decide. Maybe
it's like it was putting it all together in one little concise mm-hmm. chronicle.
How did he keep track of all that? I know.
Yeah, I think especially the last part now is very empowering.
It can be empowering, you know, even just reading it on our own, but I do think when we talk about this, and especially when these unusual events take place, you know, before we've even read it, you know, that our topics relate or that we get the thing that we get the passage that really relates to us, it really shows that it wakes me up to how much this is active in my life. It makes it more, gets my attention more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. In this chapter here, I reconsidered often my relationship with my headmaster.
Mm.
And it was quite fruitful how I am into play, what we said at the beginning of this evening. Yeah.
Okay, anybody else? Well, I guess we're ready to move on to Chronicle J.
Authentic correspondence.
So that would be you, Sharon. And she says, I didn't print it out. Are you there, Sharon?
sorry. I had my mute on.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Okay.
Where do I find it?
It's in the Dropbox.
Have it downloaded.
I think it's still in the
Dropbox. I'm trying to open the Dropbox. I don't know if it doesn't open just because I'm on the phone. Let me see if I can open the computer.
Okay, well, while you're trying to figure that out.
Not by accident. Simone can start.
Simone will be our first volunteer.
Okay. Chronicle J. Authentic correspondence. 1. Is the universe real or just an illusion in your mind? For that matter, all things considered, are you real? Is your life genuine and authentic? Is your life truly meaningful, purposeful? Do you really know and understand the meaning and purpose of yourself and life? Do you feel meaningfully fulfilled?
A lot of questions.
Yeah.
I was just thinking Roger would say that's enough there to carry on a conversation for an hour.
You're kind of cutting it short.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
I could talk on this for 2 weeks.
I would say that he would say there's enough there to write a book.
Yeah.
Anybody want to address any of those questions?
So, the first question, is the universe real or just an illusion in your mind? To me, the universe is how I make it. So it may be real for me, but for you, it may be an illusion.
But then it begs the question, are you real?
Yes.
How do you know that you're not just some data and information floating around in a bubble having a amazing dream?
I have a body.
But how do you know in your dreams you
it's
have a
real.
Body?
Did you say in my dreams I have a body?
Yeah. Don't you?
I do, yeah. Often, yeah.
So how do you know? Anybody got any ideas on that one?
I don't think you can know.
I tend to agree. I don't know if this is real.
Right. And in the end, maybe it doesn't matter.
I really think that it doesn't matter.
For how I live my life, yeah.
It's data and information, and it is creating memory, which is expanding the universe. Uh-huh. And perhaps when somebody dies, all they're doing is waking up to their eternal self.
Yes. So I am an accumulation of actions that I consider as meaningful.
Okay.
And fulfilling, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's a right answer to this question. It's just, you know.
There isn't, but I think that a lot of times we run past these things We don't even ponder it.
I know. That was the odd question to me in the whole thing. It's like, what? Out of the blue?
You know, do you ever think about this stuff? I mean...
Oh, yeah, I do.
I do all the time.
Me too.
But the whole, it ultimately comes down to, it doesn't really matter if it's real or not. And as Simone said, it's real enough for me right now. When I stub my toe, it's really real, you know?
Yes, sometimes occurrences are more real than I am. And then I have to stay back and think about, is that so?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it is not so.
I think that for a lot of people, majority of people, they don't even ask the questions, as Misty has suggested here a few minutes ago. And that is the universe real, or is life an illusion, all that kind of stuff. And it really doesn't matter, but when we get to that meaningful part, it starts mattering, I think, to each one of us. Is your life truly meaningful? That's up to each one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Is it purposeful? That's up to each one of us. Do we really know and understand our meaning and purpose in self and life? So that's very, very direct and personal. And that final one, do you feel meaningfully fulfilled? That's deep, deep, deep personal observation and analysis.
Well, I think you hit on an interesting point, Pat, that at the point of personal living, I think maybe these questions do matter. I mean, like, in an ultimate sense, I live my life, and maybe it doesn't matter. I do the best I can, and it doesn't matter. But if people just think that they're like that, they're an illusion. That can be pretty nihilistic, you know. Pretty. I don't know what. Who gives a shit then? When I think
well,
I
isn't
do
that
matters, kind of
isn't
thing.
That what the Buddhists believe, that life is an illusion?
Yeah, well, I've met people who believe that they are an illusion. Yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think it's some way. I don't know if I believe that.
Yeah, I tend to doubt that they really think that, but they certainly tout that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess we're back to you, Andrew.
Yep. Okay. Number two. What is an authentically meaningful and fulfilled self and life? Do you know? To understand this, you must consider authentic. Does this mean real or positive, right or good? Does it mean spiritual or soul-centered or according to God? Is authentic something that promotes, enhances, and maintains life?
What do you think?
Yeah, I know, right? That's a good question. What is an authentically meaningful and fulfilled self in life? Interesting question, because I'm often doing things, I think, for what I think are meaningful and fulfilling, but I could ask that question. I mean, I get so busy doing it, I'm not sure I know. But in terms of what authentic is, I mean, well, to me, if it's meaningful to you, it's authentic. I don't know. I haven't given any thought.
Well, authentic tend in the normal usage of the term tends to go towards, is it real or, you know, put on? Authentic,
mm-hmm.
Real, you know, no put on,
mm-hmm.
No... made up stuff. It's
mm-hmm.
Very real, and absent forever living, I don't know how the hell anybody could determine if they're living an authentic life. And we had a good session, weekly session a while ago, where we discussed whether or not our feelings were authentic.
Great question.
And that was that led to a really interesting bunch of discussions. People started with, of course, oh, my feelings are, well, do they reveal the authentic you? And that ended up being a really neat conversation. But I think in a broader context that Roger's talking about, I think it's, if we try to go in to, is it real or positive, good, right or good, spiritual or soul-centered, according to God, that's a whole bunch of outside measures or judgments, and there's no winning that, those. But you've got to always look outside yourself to find out whether or not you're authentic.
Well, now that you've talked about it, I think my simple definition for authentic is, you know, if it's genuinely what somebody is doing. Like, I know a lot of people who put on a certain act to accomplish something, you know, or they like try to make people think something, or it's just very inauthentic. People ask leading questions, it's very inauthentic.
How would you know when you ask?
I don't know. Like, I could just think of some instances. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's a judgment.
Well, or a discernment, either one. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying sometimes I think someone is genuinely asking a question from themselves, and sometimes I think, like, you know, somebody says, oh, don't you like this? Oh, wouldn't you like that? Or, you know, oh, isn't this going to be great for you? I mean, those aren't, what are they really saying?
Leading.
Yeah, leading questions, trying to force the other person into, you know, or like, hey, how are you doing today? Are you great? They don't want to hear the answer.
Yeah.
They're trying to force it into something. I don't know if that's what Roger's talking about. I'm just saying simply being honestly you. That's all I mean. I don't mean to get too off the subject of it. But that's an example of not authentically you.
It just makes me laugh sometimes when you said that, you know, when people ask, how are you doing? Sometimes I look at them and I say, do you really want to know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I literally look at them and say, do you really want to know?
Mm-hmm.
And that usually baffles and confuses them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a polite thing to say.
Yep, it's what I get a lot of times. You know, just a quick one-word answer would be fine.
Rules of engagement.
Yeah. Okay, Karen, would you read for us?
Number three? Number three, while authentic normally stresses fidelity to actuality and facts, since actuality and facts are constantly in question, it is better to consider that an authentic self and life is one that is not open to challenge. Or is it an origin that cannot be questioned?
Nor. Should be nor.
Nor is it an origin. An origin?
Origin?
Like true nature?
It's better to consider that an authentic self is one, and life is one that cannot be open to challenge. Nor is it an origin.
You know, it means, can it be questioned from where it comes from? You can't question where your authentic comes from. It is you. There is no question of, so what gave
right.
you the right, or who said so, or anything else. This is me. There is no questioning. This is who I am. You can't question your origin.
So he's saying it is better to consider that an authentic self in life is one that is not open to challenge, okay, understand that, nor is it an origin that cannot be questioned. That seems to go against what he just said.
Oh, you're right.
It should be an or.
Yeah, I guess it is or.
Wait, then that, wow. See, he's making a statement after that last ellipse. It is better. It didn't say, is it better?
It's a declaration.
Yeah, it is better to consider. I don't understand what he's saying here. That's what I guess I'm saying.
Okay, so break it down slowly, which is what I always do. It is better, quote, because there is no better, to consider that an authentic self in life is one that is not open to challenge. That's who you are.
Okay.
There is no question about
right.
it. You know, nothing. Or is it...
Right, I understand that.
Or is it an origin that cannot be questioned? You cannot ask where it came from or how it exists or anything else. It is what it is.
Yeah, it's just the is it. If he had said it is or it is an origin that cannot be questioned, I would see a declaration.
Or if there was a question mark on the end of there, that would be helpful.
Well, let's not get caught up on the details. Let's go forth.
No. No, because we want to have this so that people understand it. I think you may be
okay.
correct in your assumption, Karen.
That there should be a question mark there?
That it should be a question mark. Or is it an origin that cannot be questioned? Question mark.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe it's an inner
bang.
An exclamation
yeah.
point and a question mark.
Yeah.
So in not open to challenge or an origin that cannot be questioned, that doesn't mean that nobody will ever challenge or question.
But as far
you're
as
outside.
Right. But as far as you're
this is just
oh.
But as far
it's
as
me.
You're concerned, this is me. This is who I am.
Yeah.
This is the authentic me, and there's nothing to question about that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't challenge me on it. You can't change me on that. You can't persuade me mm-hmm. to be other than I am. This is
mm-hmm.
who I am. Okay.
And in the broader context of forever living, it's who I've declared myself to be.
Yes.
Mm.
And where I come from.
And in declaring who you will be is declaring how you will be alive.
Right.
Okay. Passage 4. Do you understand that imaginatively minding your eternal self origin before this life and before past lives or memories in a world of memory, this cannot be challenged or questioned.
Okay, that's what I thought he was talking about, and I wasn't sure.
Yeah. And as yourself in life today accurately and satisfyingly conforms to that origin, you will know the self in life you are living is truly authentic and does not depend on the beliefs and experiences of others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys carry on. I gotta go rescue a bird.
Okay.
So the do you understand that imaginatively minding your eternal self origin, that's where we come from, and we imaginatively
mm-hmm.
mind that into place, and before past lives are memories in a world of memory. Okay, I have to say those out loud to be able to make sure I had a picture.
You know, if it wasn't for our 08 gathering and doing the Superman stories, I really wouldn't know what he was talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe to a certain extent I don't, but he could be talking about something else, but that's the way I'm envisioning what he's talking about. But does anybody else have a different take on it?
No, I think it's like the declaration.
Okay.
How I want to be alive, or, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is authentic.
This is what?
Well, and I don't mean to, just allow me to say, because I think that's important. This is not to pick apart what you said. If I say how I want to be alive, that's want to someday, which is probably open to question. But if it's how I've chosen to be alive, that sort of, there's no discussion of that. That's a declaration.
Yes, yes, sure. Yeah.
And that's your point, Andrew, that a previous gathering with the Superman stories, that I constantly miss that point when Karen and I, of course, been there with you as well, the rest, all of us together, going through a lot of this stuff over the years, and it just sort of, it's abundantly self-evident. And then when we're talking about this kind of stuff with the group that doesn't have the same background.
Oh, yeah.
As I said, and I gloss over it because I just assume they must understand it too. And then I find out that they don't. Got to turn around and start again.
Well, you know, and on that point, that was something that when I was just listening to, I haven't listened to this whole I Am gathering that I'm digitizing right now, but like I was telling you, I find that I didn't realize at the time, but Roger put us through a number of experiences that, while they seem to be rather small maybe at the time or not even made a big impact, these things have shaped us over the years because I've heard us talking about them since then.
Mm-hmm.
The identities or the experiences or the past lives or the knowings that, you know, we now have that we didn't have before these Superman story gathering and the I Am gathering and all of these things. So he really, in a sense, helped us re-engineer the identity of who we are. It just, you know, didn't realize it was going on at the time.
I think that's really true. That the number of times that I fought with him, even that was cementing in a new identity for myself.
Well, you know, the one that it really struck me on was I happened upon this part right after we did our first regressions. And he was asking people to go around, and he basically had you start. And it meant so much to you, that experience. I don't even know if you remember it. But anyway, it's just I just know these things have all shaped us over the years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
So I refer what he's talking about to that. But if anybody has a different opinion, you know, sense, I'd love to know. Or we can move on.
Apparently not.
Okay.
Yeah, let's move on.
Number 5. You alone are the authority of your life, self in life, and no affirmation or ritual enhances that, and no challenges, changes, or lessens your authority. Fundamental.
Very. Okay, Sharon, did you find yours?
I don't have it.
Okay, so you can just be a listener and participant in the discussions. Okay, Simone?
Okay. 6. Are you willing to accept the idea that authentic is different for each person? Yes. And that anything you would willingly do eternally and have done to you eternally is authentic for you? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And a life filled with such actions and attitudes activities would certainly be real and authentic for you.
Uh-huh.
And you could be content beyond happiness in such a life. If so, do you see in this there is no right or wrong in such a self and life? Right. No good as opposed to bad as occurring.
Is occurring.
Is occurring, yes. There are no positive or negative happenings. No higher or divine self abides. What? No higher or divine self abides you.
Abides with you.
Abides with you. There is no real as opposed to an illusion. Okay.
That's
no higher or better or greater appears. And there is no overcoming or transcending. Because what is real and authentic is what is real and authentic for you.
Yeah.
And that is obviously eternally desirable for you. And in this, there are no aspects or degree or real and authentic for you. For what is real and authentic for you is who and what you are.
There you go.
That's the not questioning part here. It is how it is.
Okay, Andrew?
7. Do not establish real and authentic and try to become that, simply because what you establish as real and authentic for you is who and what you already are. Everything in the universe is to you as you are. Therefore, if the universe seems both good and evil, meaningless and without purpose, constructive and destructive, in harmony and conflict, or completely chaotic, unknown, and unknowable, yet planned and premeditated, or truly mystifying, me too, that reveals how you and your life appear to you. And unfortunately, that is as real and authentic as you and your life are for you.
Oh, isn't that a torch?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That means the inner good me is the authentic and all this other stuff I live is the bad me?
Gee, I think you've got it now,
what
Patrick.
What an insightful question there, yes.
Okay, Karen.
Number 8. Most unfortunate of all, if you believe in oneness, not in separate and different, then you believe that what is real and authentic for you is the real and authentic of the universe and everyone in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And you use your real and authentic to judge everything accordingly. And
good
then,
ingredients.
If feeling your judgments are real and authentic, you live and act accordingly. As Gianni did in the following story.
Okay. So then we'll switch off different paragraphs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is a romance. It's a mystery and a dilemma. And, in a way, it's a funny story. Yet, well, it is also very sad and unfortunate. It's filled with the unknown and secret meanings. It's, oh, but wait, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
These events took place in France and Russia, and all lands in between. Gianni, well, let's call him our hero, and Anna, his wife, traveled many roads to many towns most of their married life, because, being impatient with things, Gianni continually rushed about from place to place. He felt that a glorious variety of experiences and travels gave him prominence and honor, and he enjoyed being envied and respected by others for the wisdom he gained through extensive travels. This was a time, oh, many years ago, when most individuals of those lands stayed in one town or village all their lives. So Gianni was listened to and admired and praised for the great and mysterious adventures he told, and he reveled in the attention.
Oh. Is it an Italian name?
Yeah, Gianni.
Then it's spelled Gianni.
What do you mean it's spelled
no.
Gianni?
No.
You mean it's pronounced?
Pardon?
You mean that's how it's pronounced?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's not how Roger wanted it pronounced. Okay. He wanted it Gianni. Okay. It's your turn, Simone.
My turn. Okay. Dear Anna, on the other hand, only ventured about with him because it was expected of her to do so, for women in those times were required to follow the dictates of their husband. And Anna was a loyal and loving wife. She never really questioned their continuously traveling all about, even though she dearly longed to settle down, have a secure and steady life, and live quietly in her own house with her beloved husband. If that were possible, she wanted to give up their rushing about from off life. Rushing where from off life, yeah.
Well, but Gianni would have none of that. He always wanted to continue traveling, maybe to another town he'd just heard about, but soon after arriving there, he then wanted to be somewhere else, in still another town. He would do a thing passionately and suddenly quit that for something else. He constantly moved from one situation, one relationship, one interest, or one country to another. He wouldn't stop. He couldn't stop. He was driven. And dear Anna dutifully trailed along. And that was quite all right for a while. But one day, she finally decided to quit journeying about. She wanted to make her home in the northern part of Italy, in a quiet little village.
She spoke gently and lovingly to Gianni, saying, "Dearest husband, you do the things you must do in your life, but I cannot continue moving all about like this. I can't live this way any longer. I must settle down. And I want to have a family before it's too late."
It was a sad and difficult decision for Anna, and she was so discouraged, but she continued speaking to Gianni. "I can no longer be a part of you in this way, dearest. Would you go about and do whatever it is you want to do, or whatever you must do in life?" She sighed from the very depths of her soul, mournfully, "And when you're ready..." Oh, she began weeping ever so softly. "When you're ready, dear husband, come back to me, and I'll be a part of you." And again, sighing deeply and forlornly, she turned away from Gianni to hide her tears. She was heartbroken, for she knew he would travel on. He couldn't help himself. He was like a man possessed.
And so Gianni went away and left dear Anna to establish herself in a little Italian village, while he traveled to other towns and countries, constantly looking for delights and pleasures. He journeyed from one place to another, searching for wonderful experiences and achievements. He was seeking never newer and greater ways to create an excitement, or an interest, or a fulfillment in his life. At first he thought that just traveling would be enough, but soon it wasn't enough, and new places blended into old faces, and new things became just as the old one.
Well, there were many times when Johnny decided that all he really needed was to try something different, or maybe just to do things in some new offhand ways, and all would be well. But each time he did that, it was just more of the same. And even Johnny tried to constantly traveling about from place to another, from one place to another, over and over again, all alone. So every time he was in the northern part of Italy, he would just sort of, well, he'd drop into, say, hello to Anna. And each time he did that, he find an intimate relationship with her. And each time he went away, without knowing it, he left her pregnant.
And when Gianni came back for his next visit, he often discovered a new youngster or a different child. And Anna would say, "But dearest husband, this is your child. Here, look at your beautiful eyes. And she has your mouth and your hair. She's yours, she truly is. Just look at her." And he usually protested, saying, "But I wasn't here long enough." And though he would then count back, he could never be certain, for his visits were very often very short and the absences too long. And his doubts and uncertainties and problems were too pressing and overwhelming. He just couldn't be sure.
Well, after three times of this, Gianni was convinced that, truly so, his wife must be doing something behind his back. And he was determined to discover just what that might be.
Though he was certain as to what that was. Obviously.
Obviously, she's seeing other men, while I'm not there. And she's doing things I wish she wouldn't do, he declared angrily.
Defiantly, yes.
Soon, after one short visit, Gianni bid Anna adieu, saying, "I'll return in 5 or 6 months, for I have a long journey ahead." And he pretended to go on his way. He was certain that if he were absent for about, well, just 2 days, surely, that would set her at ease. And he could then rush back home and triumphantly expose all the things she was doing. He would confront her, and that would end that relationship. It would all be over.
Well, Gianni confidently left the village and hid out in the nearby forest. And after about 2 days, he sneaked back to the house at night, sure of what he would see through the window. But even after 2 days, he discovered that Anna was doing the same thing she always did, and there was no man around. There were no problems and no difficulties. So he skulked away, muttering, "Well, I didn't give her enough time. I'll let it be another week. That'll surely do it. Yes, that's certainly long enough."
So Gianni again went away, and again he hid in the forest. And after a week he returned. And again, Anna was doing only the things she was supposed to do, and she was not involving herself with anyone else. There was no secret relationship.
Well, with this evidence, Johnny was no longer suspicious. Now he was angrily determined, for truly so, he knew. Oh, yes, he knew. Oh, there was no doubt about in his mind. She was having affairs. Probably several different men.
He muttered. He spoke under his breath.
Ah, okay. For though there was no evidence for that, it didn't matter. Oh, he knew. Well, he just knew it was true.
And so Gianni decided to wait another week. He hid out again. But having very little food and sleeping in the bushes without a fire, for he dared not expose himself, was making him tired and hungry and angrier. And sure, and every day, while it rained and rained, oh, how he hated being rained on.
Karen? Well, at the end of the week, Gianni again returned home, tired and dirty and soaked, and shivering violently. And now, oh, this time, he was more furious than ever because, well, not only was she not doing anything wrong, she seemed to be very happy. And that really displeased and angered him more than ever, because as he figured it, certainly she must be happy about something. Gianni was now livid, enraged, almost hysterical at this situation. He was fast becoming irrational and uncontrollable.
Well, Gianni sneaking around spying on Anna continued for quite some time, but he never discovered the individual or individuals coming to her that in his mind, well, he just knew were doing this to him. Gianni would not believe the facts being shown to him, nor would he believe the words of others that she was being true, even though that's exactly what he saw was happening. He wouldn't believe it, because he had determined and was completely convinced that something else was going on. So, well, it has to be so, he declared self-righteously, and he was relentless and unyielding in his efforts to prove it.
Gianni decided once more that this time, without fail, he would prove it. So he got an individual he just knew would certainly appeal to Anna. And he asked her to make love to her. He was convinced she would give herself away this time. No doubt about it. I've planned things just right this time. She won't be able to continue hiding her evil ways from me, Humboldt. Gianni was willing to pay the man well enough, and the man, well, certainly the man was willing to take him up on his offer.
The deal was made, and the man went to Anna's house to make love to her. But she resisted him, saying, "No, I have none of that, for I am true to my dearest husband."
Okay. Well, now, that made Gianni even more convinced than ever that something was going on, for not allowing the man to make love to her undoubtedly meant she was being satisfied by someone else. Gianni was confident he was right. "How could she do this to me?" he wailed, and rushed home and confronted Anna with the evidence he had.
But she was dumbfounded by his accusations. "What evidence do you think you have? What would ever make you believe such a thing of me? What can I do to show you it isn't true? What?"
So that was my spark.
Oh, I'm sorry. You get to read now. Sorry.
In response to her distraught questioning, Gianni told her of all the things he'd done, and that in doing these things, he was convinced, undoubtedly so, that she was being unfaithful to him.
So now it's you, Patrick.
Okay. Anna was astounded, almost in shock. She couldn't understand how he possibly draw such foolish conclusions, or even that this was true of her, though she wept and pleaded. But even that made Gianni more certain than ever he was right. He bullied her, and he pushed her. He screamed and threatened to beat her, and promised to do even worse things to her if she didn't confess her sins. Oh, Anna was afraid that would happen. And now, for the first time, she was terrified of Gianni. She'd never seen him like this before. So when he went to the kitchen to get a knife, she ran home to her brother, who lived nearby.
Okay. This is your big one.
Huh.
You got to do it like Roger did. Remember how you used to do that?
No.
Go for it.
Chandy shouted triumphantly. I should have known. It's an incestuous relationship. Even that's occurring. I should have known it all along.
Well, you're beginning to see that no matter what happened in this relationship and no matter what poor Anna did, Gianni was certain that what he thought was right was actually occurring. That is, that it was truly happening. He would have it his way no matter what, and regardless of what, he would lose. Karen?
Yep.
I didn't take your turn this time.
carry on. So, dearest one, be ever cautious in your endeavors and relationships today that you do not act as Gianni did. In all things, understand the reality of what is truly happening and accept the truth of that. Never set your mind upon certain matters in life and then use everything only to convince yourself that what you already believe is true is actually right and true, despite what is being shown to you. Be wiser and greater than that.
In the months ahead, as we present many new ideas and beliefs, or we offer different views of old beliefs, don't be like Gianni and destroy everything merely to hold on to those old beliefs. See what's truly happening all around you.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Does anybody want to discuss this?
Do you mean the story we just read? Or the passage you just read? Yeah, so Misty, I was curious. Do you remember the person who's reading this was? I'm not asking about him. I'm just, do you remember this?
Yes, I remember her.
Okay, and so was this story given in response to like a particular question or circumstance, or was this a standard, you know, Roger reading of your struggles and then your purposes in life,
that
kind of thing?
Yeah, it was his reading.
Okay, interesting.
And this was her first
story. I mean, I could certainly see how it was a specific circumstance, but then, you know, to broaden it out, I was just imagining the kind of circumstances that would have a life like this.
Yeah, and you know, the first reading is the one that's most impactful on your life, and this was her first story.
Okay.
It's very interesting.
Hey, number 9. In the books and chronicles ahead, and as you reconsider these new ideas and beliefs and our experiences, or we offer different views of old beliefs, don't be like Gianni and destroy everything merely to hold on to your old beliefs and ways. See what's truly happening all around you. Real and authentic are the wondrously surprising things language and tradition conceal and keep you from seeing and living.
Simone?
Yes. 10. Henry David Thoreau wrote, if a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music he hears. However measured or far away.
Okay, so Henry David Thoreau is a very famous American writer. And if you read it with the inflection that it says, if a man does not keep pace with his companion, if he doesn't keep up with them, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music he hears, however measured or far away. So it doesn't matter who he is or how he is different from anybody else. Let him be who he is. And that's what Thoreau was talking about here.
They may not say that in Switzerland, yeah?
Huh?
I was looking at your pictures you posted, and I was just, like, you know, on Facebook this week, and I was just thinking about, I don't know, do they believe that in Switzerland, that each person marched their own drummer?
I don't think. No.
Okay.
No.
So it's more conforming to the, I guess what, one truth or something, or reality, or... whatever.
On the foreground, it is as you said. But when you look closer,
okay,
I am responsible for everybody else because I have to share the payment for their illness. I have to share this with them. I have to share that with them. It's right now. It's driving me like crazy. I'm not ready to share everything with everybody. I mean, money-wise.
Mm-hmm. You're saying it's, that's the social system? That's the belief of the society? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I didn't see it so clear as I see it in... let's see, in the last half year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are some political discussions where I have to say, why do we discuss this? I don't understand it anymore, the system. No.
Okay. Any other discussion on that one? Okay, I'm moving on. 11. Should you desire through suscitation, you can hear and visualize and experience the soothing and tranquil yet inspiring music, or berceuse? I'm sorry, I don't know this word. Of eternal being played for you here and now and feel connected.
Yeah, I remember looking this up and...
I'm going to look it up right now because I'm dang curious and never run across that word. Berceuse is a lullaby. Oh, and I'm sorry, I didn't pronounce it right. Berceuse. According to Google. Berceuse. Yeah, it's interesting I got that one because I've been feeling like I'm missing that one lately. There have been moments in my life where I really feel like there's like an inner focus I have or something that's pulling everything together in a certain context, and right now I'm not really feeling that one.
What is suscitation again, guys?
It's like all those things that you did in 14B to awaken your eternal self, or awaken to, I'm not remember what it was, awaken to or awaken your eternal self, either one.
Yeah.
It's not limited to any one particular thing, but...
Mm-hmm. Number 12. Being connected is having and constantly living an astounding visual understanding and experience of your ever-expanding, extending eternalness, communion with your personal self and life today.
13. The world around you and the world within you are much too close for you to see, experience, and realize the eternal recurring nature of yourself and the universe. For an expansive and extensive view of eternal matters, you must step back, way back, so you can see and connect with your own and the universe's eternal nature. Patrick.
Yeah, I'm just
thinking about that one.
On the DVD, I'm just reading words to myself again. The world around you and within you is much too close for you to see and experience and realize the eternal, recurring nature. Okay, so stepping way, way back.
He says that, you know, he used to say that it's very incestuous.
Yep, okay. Okay. Number 14. You can see distant stars and galaxies and sense the eternal nature of the universe. But how do you stand far enough away from yourself to see and experience your own eternal nature?
Like step in the shoes from eternal self, or?
Just sense your eternal nature, I think.
Okay, Andrew?
Why am I after Patrick?
Oh, it's me. No, I'm still pondering here.
Well, ponder. Go ahead.
That's
a good one.
Talk it out.
Yeah, is it what I just said? Stepping in the shoes of the eternal self or expanded self?
Yeah.
And see what I'm doing?
Yep. Pretty much.
Okay. Well. Then, 15. Past lives and suscitation book both offer you an expanded and somewhat extended image and experience of yourself to understand and realize, and to keep you personally connected to the eternally recurring nature of all things. Now,
staying too close to your present beliefs and activities, or looking deeply within, especially looking to the core or source of yourself, keeps you too close to see and understand your recurring eternal nature. Are you willing to step away from your present beliefs, away from yourself and life today, and your present activities, away from your present and previous experiences, and away from your inner self and world? You know, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, are you willing to do that?
I have been practicing that, and the weird thing is I understand, at least I'm beginning to understand why other people or maybe myself haven't really done this much before. Sometimes I just am trying, I try to just get so far away from my present beliefs and ideas that, like, in kind of a imagination kind of exercise or something, and I can really get lost. I mean, I can really literally lose my mind or my way if I was, I think I can if I was to go too far with that.
In what way? When you say you get lost, what does that mean? What does that look like?
It means, like, could you just imagine opening your eyes and not knowing where you are, not remembering who you are, not remembering what's going on, that kind of thing?
Do you really believe that you could get that far away?
I remember being a kid that way. I don't know. I'm just saying it seems like I could get there if I really put the effort into it. I don't know if I would stay there, but I mean, most people are terrified of that because they think, well, I don't want to be crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's like you can't, I don't know, it's very difficult to regenerate yourself through old ideas, I think. I could be wrong about that. Maybe I'm trying to go too far with this. But if you really wanted to, say, pick up new perceptions and abilities, I don't know.
I think number 16 describes the veneer of our body existence.
Okay.
And that there is, well, in my view, the fear is when I step away from all that veneer of my body existence, would I ever be willing to go back to it?
And that's a great question.
And that what will this new life look like?
It is curious because a lot of people that say that, you know, they had a near-death experience and they really didn't want to come back. I mean, a lot of them have said that. Because life itself was so confining compared to what they experienced when they weren't in their body.
I'm pondering what it means to step away from your present beliefs and activities. Like, I guess it could include, you know, going and hanging out with the opposite political party, or going, you know, and living in a completely different place, or taking the opposite side of an argument that you normally wouldn't even consider.
Well, I think all that's still within the thing. How about just for a minute, forget about who you are. I mean, really forget who you are, mm-hmm. and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that as Andrew said, imagination is the place where you could really get to what he's talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, question that and take it into imagination and see where it takes you.
Number 17 goes into it in greater detail.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Oh, power on.
Number 17. Are you willing to step away from your body and feelings? Away from your hopes and desires and inner urgings. Away from the meaning and purpose of yourself and life. Away from friends and family and everything you hold dear. Even from life itself. If not, never get far enough away from yourself to realize and experience your eternal nature, so you can bring that into yourself and life today.
And so maybe that's what you were getting close to, Andrew.
Maybe, and I mean, I'm not really trying to do this like in a safe room. I mean, I'm just doing this sitting on the bus some days or whatever. It's been frustrating to try and understand some of these things that Roger talks about and have the constant reminder, you know, that I was always coming from my old beliefs and stuff. So to try and, you know, reassemble everything or regenerate everything, I sometimes try to step out as far as I can to look at things anew. I don't know if he'd recommend that. I mean, certainly I know how to look at things with a fixed point of reference now, but I'm trying something different.
Have you ever, go ahead, Patrick.
That I'm reminding myself now of alternatives and options. If we don't step away and we want to change ourselves in life, we're just going to do alternatives. We're doing more of the same thing.
There you go.
Different. But if that stepping away gives us the opportunity to live options that we haven't even thought of, that arise emergently in our lives.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I notice is that we have very habitual ways. If we're in familiar territory, like neighborhood or house or something, at least I have very familiar places that my eyes go, and how I guess I the coordinates I give myself for where I am. But you know, when you wake up fresh or something, or when you get into the state of mind, you can look at things and see something you've never seen on a street you go down every day. And then what I think happens is kind of like what you're saying, Pat. You can start to see and get new ideas and experiences. And I'm not advocating Buddhist, you know, lose your mind kind of thing. I'm just saying that's just something I'm trying.
Have you ever, mm-hmm. any of you, kind of played the game? I don't know a better term for it, but try to walk into somebody else's life and try to experience how you would see the world through their eyes, and do day-to-day life through their eyes, and that kind of thing. That can be very expansive in itself. Put yourself into a whole different belief system, a whole different set of circumstances, you know, and pick somebody that's really different than you. Like,
well,
you know.
So that's what I was getting at right at the beginning, that, you know, go and take the opposite perspective from an argument that you...
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be just doing life differently, not different?
Well, but wouldn't it also give you a chance to see who you are? You put your body self into a situation that's completely foreign to you, and then the commonality in both situations would be who you are.
Karen, is there a field report in this? Have you tried this before?
Oh, I'll take the opposite side of an argument just to see what it's like sometimes.
That's the Gemini.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, what Misty's talking about kind of happens when you do a reading. And I say kind of happens because I also find it's, you know, if you don't know how to get out of your own way, you can bring too much of your own stuff into it. So part of my reason for doing this exercise is how far out of my own way can I get so I could really, you know, see the world from another person's point of view or feel it from their point of view or whatever.
Yep.
Well, Misty, I've done what you suggested or talked about a moment ago, and I actually find it really, what's the term? I think I get there quite thoroughly into somebody else's skin, and I really want to back out because I can't understand how the hell they live inside that skin. When I get to see how they're living and what they're seeing. So many people, and I guess myself included, so many people, when I get inside their skin, I see mostly fear. And they're so fear-based in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true of society as a whole.
Yeah. But there's that, Andrew, this stepping, getting out of our way, us guys that do the past life readings, I think, really strive for that. I find that I can get myself into a place where I'm just observing and not having any sort of, in the vernacular, no skin in the game. I'm not judging at all. I'm just seeing and noting, and there's just no emotion in terms of happy, sad, fearful, or anything. It's just
crying.
I'm observing, and there's a special feeling, or a notable feeling in my body,
mm-hmm.
and it goes along with that, and it's timeless, it's interesting, it's a neat place to be. I wouldn't mind training myself to do that on a daily basis, hourly, moment moment to moment. It's quite different and actually invigorating and expansive. But I slip out of it and I go back into body and I got my own set of fears of that where I live.
Okay, and with that, I would say that that's the end of this Monday night. Unless anybody else has something to add to that discussion?
Nope.
No.
Then I would say good night for now.
Wait, so where did we leave off for next week? I'm sorry.
We are on 18, huh?
We finished 18. That was the one that I read. So we're starting with 19.
Thank you.
Okay.